He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, we are trying to get Jim Bates, HARP Program Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate on, Ed Kennedy, U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, Dr. Paul Cossey, HARP Program Manager for the Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate. And we just got a call from the public relations spokesman for Kirtland Air Force Base, and we're talking to him. He says they're about to call in, so we hope they come on. You know, we've had a few guests on talking about what they believe HARP does, what they admit it does, and I thought, you know, why not, and Trey, my producer, thought, why not get the people from HARP on? We had General Parton on years ago who headed up the Air Force's stuff on, and he wouldn't talk about it. I mean, I had him on about some other issues with the military, and he was actually talking about his Sino-Soviet split paper he wrote that was then adopted into policy and then thrown out of policy back in the 60s. He became the head of Air Force Weapons Development, and just while we had him on, we took a call, and the caller said, you directed HARP, and he said, well, I'm not going to get into it, it's classified. So we'll see if these guys will come on and, I mean, tell us what HARP is, at least from their perspective, or what they can tell us. I mean, let me tell you, they were very helpful. Trey called them last week and just said, I want somebody on from HARP, and they called back and said, okay, Jim Bates, HARP Program Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate. What is HARP doing with space vehicles? I mean, is this for scanning for satellites or missiles? That's what I was always told, is that it was an over-the-horizon radar system that went into space as well, but Parton wouldn't talk about that, but he did say it had something to do with that. Ed Kennedy, U.S. Naval Research Laboratory. We've had old Ben Livingston on, who was there for a while, the head of it with weather weapons. That was interesting. That was declassified. I mean, we just try to bring you, these are really interesting things. And we like to go directly to the source of where this where these programs are being carried out. And we did announce we were having these guests on, and we're a controversial show, and talking to the public relations guy, he was saying, now, what do you want them on about? And I said, look, I'm having them on about whatever they want to say. And I am here in the lurch. John, have we gotten any of these guys on? They have not called in. And do we still have the fellow who's, well, Mike's listening in? Go ask him what the ETA here is, because I don't like doing this. And we have to reschedule him. That's fine. I don't want to make a big issue out of this. We just wanted to have him on. Kind of like it was declassified, that the whole the weather weapons program's up till 75, and before it was any news article, I said, wow, my listeners have sent me these declassified documents, and they were online, Library of Congress. I said, I better call Ben Livingston. And he was up in the panhandle of Texas running a weather control company. We flew into Austin and had him on. And he had talked about how they controlled hurricanes, steered them, directed them. And then Fox News, AP, and others picked up on that, Coast to Coast AM. And we do have some of the stuff that's been declassified about HARP here. And I thought, why not go directly to the source instead of have people claim HARP does this or HARP does that? I don't know what it does because it's classified. So we just wanted to get the word from them. Oh, fantastic. Dr. Paul Cossey, HARP Program Manager for the Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate. Doctor, did I get that title correct?
That's correct.
Wow, this is just amazing to have you on with us. What is HARP? I mean, there's so many rumors flying around, so many different things that have been said. One time I had an Air Force retired general on about a totally different issue, and a caller called in and said, you were the director of HARP for the Air Force, and he wouldn't talk about it. So I appreciate you guys coming on. What is HARP?
Well, I always have to smile because we certainly do like to talk about what HARP is, because there's certainly a lot of what it isn't. It's been a favorite program in the growth of the Internet. We started about the time the Internet did, and somehow it got picked up and became a kind of a favorite blog for a lot of people. Unfortunately, what HAARP is and versus what it isn't are so different that it's hard to even get into that. So in terms of what it is, it's a research facility to conduct research in ionosphere and radio science, much like the type. It started way back in the days of Marconi in the early 1900s, whenever they discovered that radio waves somehow got across the ocean, which was a great surprise. And that led to a whole growth of science in understanding the ionosphere, radio waves, and the physics and the chemistry of all those things.
That even led to sonar.
And, well, that's right. That's an acoustic-type wave. It goes underwater. But in any event, in terms of the radio science and ionospheric work, that's gone on for tens of years, and over time it's led to, obviously, the development of many systems that we're very familiar with and quite happy with, including our modern communication systems and satellite comm and long-distance comm and even the global positioning radio system, which grew out of this type of research. So what HAARP is really kind of modern-day version and capabilities to extend and do those kind of studies, we hope, well into the next century. So it's radio science, it's ionosphere physics and chemistry, and even space science, because radio waves indeed go out into space.
Yeah, what is this part about Space Vehicles Directorate?
Well, those are some of the arcane names that get put on organizations. But in terms of the Air Force Research Laboratory, there are a number of directorates that focus in certain technology areas like aerospace, sensors, and space vehicles does connote in many senses.
Why? Because HAARP might be used to detect satellites or ICBMs or...
No. Now, let me just say what the organization is, and you'll see how we're in there. The space vehicle has to do with a lot of the work in the directorate is involved with planning new satellite systems or demonstrations. So remember, it's a research lab. Most of the things...
Yeah, so there's lots of different experiments and programs that are going on, and so the overall...
Related to space, and in terms of the directorate that my group is involved with, that we are part of that directorate in terms of the name.
Well, sir, maybe the stories get started because there are so many different agencies and directorates and programs inside there that are compartmentalized. I mean, I have no doubt. I hear all sorts of wild stuff. That's why we've got you on. And so basically, but there are parts of it that are classified, obviously.
Let me put it this way. The HAARP program... We're very, very well known and known in the scientific community because most of the work we do is very basic research, I must say. And the description of the facility and looking at it and seeing it, there's nothing classified about it. It's in many ways, it's impressive because of its beautiful location and it is a does consist of...
That's a good question. What is it? What's on there? I mean, all these antennas, what do they do?
Okay, those antennas are kind of, if you like, a special version of Radio Moscow or the Voice of America or the BBC. They're high-frequency transmitting system, short-wave transmitting system, basically. However, it's a transmitting system to do research. And the energy from those transmitters and the antennas are directed upward. We're interested in studying how radio waves interact up in the ionosphere. We're talking about up over 50, 60, up to hundreds of miles and even thousands of miles into space. That's what the basic studies are involved with. Whereas Voice of America, more conventional HF system for communications or broadcasting music, the energy is directed low along the ground because you want it to go far distance across the ocean and so
forth. Sure, but let's say Voice of America is 1,000,000 watts. How many watts are you guys putting out?
That's a good example. The Voice of America is the radiated power of 1,000,000 watts. The completed HAARP facility, which is finished last year about this time, is a little more than 3.5 million watts.
3.5 million watts. What about people that say that it's for weather control or weather modification?
Well, it has, you know, unfortunately, it's totally off-base. It has no interactions or affects anything with weather systems. Remember, the weather systems are relatively close to Earth, the jet stream and things like that are not all that high up there. We're talking about the HARP energy going up and interacting out in the areas hundreds of miles into space.
This is even going into the Van Allen radiation belt, isn't it?
Well, the radio waves, it's the high enough frequencies that can get through the ionosphere, go out into deep space. That's true.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Russians do advertise that they have these radio arrays that they claim clear the skies. That's like BBC News, Associated Press. The communist Chinese claim that they have smaller arrays that can manipulate the weather. I mean, can't you see that that's why people then think that what you're doing is similar to that?
Well, I don't know if I can see or even understand that. It's just that it has nothing to do with, HARP has nothing to do with such things. And, in fact, the physical basis for talking about that or interacting with radio waves to do things like that is unknown to me, I must say. That is to say, I don't know what the technical or physical base for people thinking that one could do that, even where that comes from.
Remember, you think it's just more of the Russians making stuff up then?
I can't speak for the Russians. I'll talk to you about HARP, but I have no idea what you're saying. What they're saying or who's saying it. That's the other
okay,
thing.
Fantastic, doctor. You've got
a blog on a Russian. I have no idea.
You've got quite a bio. I apologize for not properly introducing you. Stay right there, so we're going to be right back after this quick break and see if some of your colleagues are going to be able to join us. We'll be right back after this quick break. Typed into Google, Russians to clear skies for parade. I had remembered that headline from a few years ago. And Associated Press headline, nuclear missiles paraded across Red Square. And then it says, and then it goes into how they manipulated the weather with these different radio waves to clear the skies for the parade. Here is another one about Russia remembers World War II with lavish victory parade. And it says that they use these antenna arrays to clear the sky. So I think that's what gets tied in to HARP because it looks similar. And I was talking to the director, Dr. Paul Cossey, HARP Program Manager for the Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate, during the break. And he was saying that he had heard about some of those systems for knocking out fogs. So I mean, you are saying you have, Doctor, read about radio-type systems that do manipulate some of the weather.
That because I'm not familiar with that. I know there have been attempts, for example, to disperse fog. Now, often that involves with a lot of, I assume, fans and things like that. Now, the use of radio waves to do it is unbeknownst to me, but I don't have any competence in that area, and I'm not familiar with it, and I'm not aware of it.
Well, what findings is one of the top experts on HARP in the world? I mean, what are some of the neat things that are declassified that you can talk about that you've been able to do with HARP, or what data have you learned? I mean, we just want to know.
Well, as I mentioned to you earlier, HARP is a radio science, ionosphere radio science program to do the kind of research that is not new in a certain way. It's been going on since the days of Marconi to understand how radio waves interact with the ionosphere in space. What those mediums do to it under various conditions, natural conditions, when there's solar disturbances. Because we know, for example, when there are solar disturbances, certain radio waves can get affected, even blacked out, and you have to go to other systems at different radio frequencies. And all this knowledge is gleaned over the years through radio science and ionospheric science and research. And HARP is basically just a modern version to continue that research, hopefully, with more sensitive instruments, better diagnostic instruments, and more flexibility to understand how radio waves interact in the ionosphere and space. and whether we can exploit those to improve communications, navigation, whatever, radar systems. So it's nothing particularly new in terms of the ideas and concepts. It's bringing more modern tools, better capabilities with the new computer control systems, ways to...
But you're not denying that in separate government programs, there's been weather modification and weather manipulation programs. I mean, those have been declassified.
Well, again, I'm not involved with such programs, and I'm not familiar with them, and I can't speak to them, frankly.
How did you get into this? I mean, how did you decide to get a doctorate in all of this?
Well, you don't want my history, because my graduate work was in an area totally outside of this, but then I was brought into the Air Force as an officer in 1967 and assigned to the Air Force Research Lab up near Boston. And I learned basically a new area outside of my PhD work. But that was great. There's nothing wrong with that. And I was assigned to a group in radio science and ionospheric science. And I liked it so much that when my tour was up in 4 years, I signed on as a civilian employee of the laboratory. And I've been there over
four years. You talked about a lot of other programs going on, a lot of other directorates and groups. I mean, are you privy to all the programs going on with HAARP, or are you privy over one directorate?
What do you mean, the HAARP? HAARP is assigned, is under the directorate I'm in, and it has no tentacles or no other wings in other places I'm not familiar with. It's a pretty self-contained program.
You just said that there. Okay, so it's one program there, but I know there's a lot of other agencies and things that are there looking at the data, and I guess they get space on the system to run their own tests. Or I mean, how many different agencies are involved looking at the data, doing experiments?
Well, we have a joint program actually. It was set up as a joint program some years ago with the Air Force and the Navy. And then with the participation of, for example, the DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, has been involved. In fact, all three agencies were the funders over the recent 4 or 5 years that basically brought the facility to the capability it has. And so in terms of what HAARP can study, radio wave interactions in the ionosphere and space, and how they might impact communications, radars.
Okay, stay there, sir. Final segment with our guest. He's the director of the HAARP program, Dr. Paul Cossey. We really appreciate him joining us. Stay with us.
Don't want no shackles. Don't want no shackles on me.
We're back live, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment with the... director of the HAARP program, manager for the Air Force Research Laboratory Space Vehicles Directorate. He's the head honcho over it all. We're unable to get to Dr. Jim Bates on and Ed Kennedy, the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory at the end, said, oh, we don't think we're going to give him classification or allow him to go do that for some reason. I mean, if it's no big deal, and during the break you guys were saying you might invite me up to a HAARP open house, I mean, Doc, if it's not anything so secret or anything, why would the Navy, who originally wanted us to have Ed Kennedy on, Dr. Ed Kennedy, why would they not want him on with us?
No, that's a little unfair to what's going to happen. Just like in our case, the agencies have public affairs office to kind of funnel and channel questions so that consistent and the right people are involved, and that's usually done ahead of time. Unfortunately, in this case, I was only brought in just fairly recently because I'd been out, but it was worked through the Air Force at Albuquerque, and that was Michael Kleiman in our offices.
I understand. So it was just a snafu because this was set up so
Yeah,
soon.
But the connection wasn't made through the Navy offices, and I wasn't realized until today, I guess, but... No, yeah, normally it would have been.
Oh, so that's bureaucracy. They're mad that they weren't contacted. I understand, Doctor.
I mean, it wasn't gone. It didn't go through the public affairs offices. That's all. That's always the case. It has to be done. It's just to have consistency and make sure the right people are involved and that there's, you know, not that everyone knows what's going on.
How many interviews have you done, Doctor, on HAARP? I mean, for radio or TV?
Oh, there's been quite a few with newspaper people and magazine people, and a couple times, I guess, not live radio, but the National Public Radio has asked questions, and then they actually send people to some of the open houses and get a little more and talk to us.
What's the best question you were ever asked?
What's that?
What's the best question you've ever been asked by the media?
Well, unfortunately, the questions are more tied to what it isn't, and so you get a lot of humorous questions asked, which are hard to answer because it's hard to say what you aren't. You know, you just kind of
like, are you hiding space aliens in the basement?
Yeah, or say, well, you know, one of the best questions I got was from a phone call that went on for 15 minutes. It was from a lady in Alaska, way in the early days of HARP, and that was concerned. And she went on for 15, 20 minutes, and I patiently answered every question. And I thought I had brought around the understanding that we weren't harmful. And, in fact, you know, we work there. We can't we're interested in our health, too, and things like that. We went, you know, we're not fools. And I thought I convinced her of that. And at the end of this 15 minutes, she says, "That's what I thought you said, and I don't still believe a word you said." But, you know, you get dumbfounded in something like that. You know, I asked, like, answered 50 questions from a very one at a time and very carefully, and then the answer is, she's, "Well, I thought you'd say that, and I don't believe you." So that's the kind of thing that's frustrating.
I understand. I get accused of things that aren't true. Look, I have no doubt that most of the program is what you say it is, and I'm sure that it does get confused with other programs, other things that are going on, because I've had the Father Weather Weapons on, and you know, there's all these declassified documents on that, creating hurricanes, steering them, killing them in the 60s.
Well, I guess I see that, and we've certainly been accused of that, which is fascinating. Of course, we're not, you know, it's totally off the wall, but where those ideas come from even, where's the physical basis for them? Because, you know, I'm not aware of any physical basis.
Well, the weather control is with cloud seeding, the documented standard
that's
research.
That's a different thing. You know, you're talking about maybe putting chemicals up in the clouds.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're not talking about
But see, people believe that with HARP that chemicals are put in, and then so some of the scientists have said, and then these different radio arrays then somehow energize those chemicals that have been put in the air, those metals, and that somehow that's part of a weather modification or part of some type of over-the-horizon radar. I'm not sure, but those are the different ideas.
I see those things, but I'm just flabbergasted because I don't know what the technical base is, and certainly it's nothing to do with HARP or any capability that HARP would have. Remember,
but there is a lot of classified stuff you're doing, though.
No, actually not. In fact, nothing I'm doing is classified.
Well, when I had General Parton on, who said decades ago he was involved in HARP, he wouldn't talk about it. But I had him on about another subject, and a caller called in, and he just said, "It's all lies. What you hear about, it's lies.
Well,
but it's classified, and I'm not going to talk about it."
I don't know who General Parton is or was, but if you're talking about decades ago, HARP is only got started even in the planning stages in the 1990s, and we've really only finished the site the last February, and are now using it.
Well, he was the head of Air Force Weapons Development, and he said he'd been involved. I think he got out in the early 90s, so I'm not sure, but you might look that up. I'm sure he just wouldn't talk about it.
I'm the oldest person with the program. I was with it from day one, and I know of no such connection with anyone like that, and I'm, you know, that's just a fact.
Are there other radio testing systems that could be confused with that?
Again, if you're talking about other facilities, other programs, I'm not privy. I'm not aware of them. Again, HARP it does its interactions out deep, hundreds of miles up. Remember, the things that control your weather are much closer to Earth.
No, I understand.
In fact, you know, airplanes that fly in the jet stream produce more power than what HARP can.
But we know that the different space waves, the different types of particles that come into the atmosphere, they're now saying that's a large part of our weather in the formation of clouds.
I don't know what you're talking about there.
Well, I mean, that's mainline scientific, you know, the sun and different particles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Solar certainly affects, but But in terms of the interactions of radio waves such as HARP, they're puny. Remember, lightning goes off tens of times a second all over the world and produces radio waves and strength and energy that just dwarf anything.
I understand. The sun is a huge
man makes, including
huge broadcaster of radio waves.
Yeah, I mean, it's just puny. We're puny. In fact, our interactions are so weak, we need to be where we are because it's what we call relatively quiet from electrical noise. And the interactions, the things we're studying that we can do with HARP are so weak out in space that we need very sensitive instruments just to detect them and just to try to understand them. But they do produce a method by which we can repeat experiments and try to understand these processes that occur when radio waves interact in a space medium, and that's important. And you understand what affects your radio waves, good or bad.
Well, have you guys discovered anything? I mean, like a cyclotron, you know, discovers new particles. I mean, have you guys discovered any new theories or ideas different laws?
A lot of basic research to understand the physical processes that occur when radio waves interact in an ionized medium up in space, and then try to understand those and hopefully apply them to applications related ideas. The facility itself is for the research. It's not an operational thing to communicate with
anyone. I understand, pure research. What about other countries, the Russians, the Chinese, the European Union? Do they have similar programs, Doctor?
The European community has a facility in Tromsø, Norway, as part of the, what they call the ICEF community there, that actually was a facility like HARP that's been around a lot longer than HARP, to do the same kind of kind of research to understand the physics and chemistry and radio wave interactions in space.
Who do you pass your data on to once it's done?
Well, most of their work is published in open literature. In fact, if you go to the scientific go to Google Scientific and type in HARP, you'll see hundreds of papers produced out of the research of HARP, and you'll see the authors are leading scientists in the university communities, for example, and the government laboratories.
Yeah, you brought up
published in the open literature. We've been a subject of articles in prestigious journals such as Nature, and we our scientists participate in international conferences that are well known around the world. It's in the open literature.
Sure. Shifting gears, Doctor.
I challenge you. Type it in. Go to Google the scientific part and type in just HARP, and I'm sure you'll see lots of papers being brought up in describing the type of work that's done there, and you'll see by and large university community is primarily involved with it.
Now, HARP is several different bases, isn't it? Several different facilities?
No, HARP is we basically have a site up in Alaska, Gakona, Alaska, and what you, I don't know whether it was offline that you mentioned, it was originally going to be way back in the 70s and 80s, there were plans to build a Air Force over-the-horizon radar system up at that facility back in those days. But with the change in strategic situation, that program was dropped in the 90s. And after a lengthy environmental approval process, that site became available to us for the scientific purposes of building the HARP facility. That's, as I say, up in Gakona, Alaska.
Okay.
That's the only location we have, but we do have diagnostic instruments at various locations on the ground in Alaska.
Photometers?
Photometers, those are optical-type devices that if the weather's right, so to speak, in space, a space weather, and there's not too much natural disturbances going on like aurora, if it's what we call quiet, and on those kind of nights, when we send the radio waves from HARP up, we can produce miniature emissions of light. They're somewhat like aurora things, but they're so weak that that if there's any other natural aurora going on, we wouldn't see
I understand.
It.
And so you observe those. What are magnetometers or magnetometers?
Those are instruments that typically are set out all over the world to measure the Earth's magnetic field, the geomagnetic field that surrounds the Earth. And whenever there's like eruptions on the sun, like a solar flare or magnetic storms, you'll see those magnetic field components vary and jump around, and then they'll get quiet when it's quiet again. So that's a way to measure the...
Yeah. You just brought up something super interesting, though. I mean, we've only got 5 minutes.
We do have one at HARP. There's others around the lab. Oh, they're all over the place. They're normal scientific instrument for detecting changes in the Earth's magnetic field.
We've only got 5 minutes left with you, sir, and you just brought up something really interesting. I didn't know that. So you guys are able to mimic on a smaller scale the aurora borealis.
Well, in a very local region, we can produce an emission that, if you want, would be akin to something like that. But it's so orders of magnitude is below what nature does.
I understand.
So
why are you taking photos of that? A, why are you studying that? B,
well, what you do there when you do some of those kind of work. By seeing where those emissions occur, what altitude, what the wavelengths with them are, you can start to understand the chemical constituents. What's the how much nitrogen, what oxygen, and what's the percentage of things like that at various altitudes in space. That's one way to kind of sort that out, but it's a complicated thing. So that's
like a spectrometer.
Is kind of the same thing. You're measuring these emissions at different optical wavelengths, and different emissions will occur at different altitudes, for example, and it gives you an idea of where the interactions are occurring, how they move around, and what's the relative concentration of some of those constituents up there.
Amazing. In closing, two final questions. What causes the aurora borealis, and how are the radio waves causing a reaction that mimics that on a small scale?
Okay, they are actually different physical processes with a similar-like result. In the aurora borealis, you're normally dealing with charged particles from the Van Allen belt in space, what we call precipitating into the lower atmosphere. They actually come in lower than normal instead of bouncing out in deep space in the Van Allen belt in certain conditions, particularly after solar eruptions or geomagnetic storms. They can be channeled further down, and they get down to about 100 kilometers altitude where they collide with neutral atoms, which are more prevalent closer to Earth, and those collisions produce these emissions.
Is that because the magnetic field isn't as strong at the poles?
No, it's strong, and it's more vertical, and so the charged particles are able to actually somewhat guided along the
magnetic. Oh, it's because it is stronger, it sucks them in.
And more vertical, so they can kind of come down to lower altitudes. And when they get down to where the air is relatively dense, relatively speaking anyhow, out at 100 kilometers, 60 miles up or so, that actually will cause the charged particles will knock off, collide with the neutral particles, and one of the reactions is the emission of light at various wavelengths.
Got it. Here's the last question. We've only got 2 minutes. Sorry to interrupt you, Doctor. I could talk all day to you with limited time. Sorry I'm interrupting. Final question.
Well, when the radio wave does that, it's a little different. It goes up, and the radio wave interacts with the charged particles and causes them to vibrate, and then they bang into neutral particles, and that produces the emissions.
Got you. So it's a vibrating.
So it's a collision process in terms of what we're talking about.
Final minute, sir. Got to ask you this question. You brought up health effects, locals worrying about it. They admit in government reports that cell towers up close are bad for life, that cell phones.
Who admits that?
There are thousands of government studies now where they've shown increases. But you're saying you're not worried about your health. But, I mean, with radio transmitters, you don't want to go sit on top of a radar dish or sit in there with the transmitters. That would be bad for you, right?
Well, I think one would be prudent if you're something was vibrating in your car, you wouldn't want to sit on it too long. But No, I think those kind of questions are up, being studied by the appropriate organizations and people.
But you're saying you feel safe working up there and...
Oh, yeah. In fact, again, the fields that we encounter are so weak compared to what's just naturally around us that, as I say, we're puny. Now, the facility looks big. I mean, it's impressive in terms of the number of antennas and that, but that's just the nature of the technology. To be able to get a signal that we can measure hundreds of miles up, that signal, by the time it leaves the ground and gets out there, it's so weak that, you know, it really has a hard time competing with natural.
Okay, Doctor, I want to thank you. I want to thank the Air Force Base for having you on. Dr. Paul Cossey, just Google HARP. You can find the Air Force site there at Kirkland. Thank you for the time, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Let me say bye to you during the break. Yeah, Trey set up the HARP people. When I got back in town late last week, and he said, told me Friday, I set up the director of HARP, and I'm like, what? You should have heard it behind the scenes, though. They had this PR guy on the line with him the whole time. That's why his phone sounded muffled. And they put off this whole, you know, persona of it's no big deal, it's all above board. And I have no doubt that a lot of it is exaggerated, what you hear on the web, or they combine other programs in with it. So there's hundreds of different programs fiddling with the atmosphere and, you know, oh, these radio waves aren't doing anything, but we can make aurora borealis with them. Which is exactly what the scientists we've had on say, that the technology they test and develop there is then farmed out in other programs. And I'm sure that the head of HARP doesn't even know about those other programs. That's how General Stubblebine was the head of Special Forces, head of Army Intelligence, and he didn't know most of what was going on in other departments. But Dr. Paul Cossey, they were really begging me to come up to HARP. And I was joking with them, saying, yes, you can replace me with an alien clone or something. Oh, God help us. You know the world's in a lot of deep trouble when having a discussion with the director of HARP is light talk, light discussion. But you notice I brought up, well, cell towers and cell phones are known to give you cancer. He's like, who? Who says that? What? Ridiculous. Just thousands of government reports. Totally admitted, not debatable. The cell phone companies are saying use a hands-free. The cell phones are putting out now ratings saying we have the lowest, you know, microwave radiation emission. They say the Razor has the lowest. Working in radio, working around engineers, you know, they have it in a separate building. You don't want to be around the transmitter on an AM or FM. If it's big, not a little one. But if it's a 5,000 watt, 10,000 watt, 50,000 watt, 100,000 watt, AM or FM transmitter, you don't want to be anywhere near it. It'll burn you. The radar dishes will burn you. I mean, everybody knows that. That's admitted. He was like, well, maybe there might be something to that, but the proper authorities are looking into that. Now, the way talking to radio engineers, radio science engineers, is that if you have an antenna, say, 100 feet long, for 100 feet out from it, it's putting fry you energy out. And then it cuts off by half at 100 feet, and then another 100 feet it cuts down by half. So 1,000 feet out or something, you've got a tenfold reduction in the power of that wave. The problem is there's so many antennas, so many things all around us, and it's not the natural waves that we are accustomed to and that we're designed for and that even govern our sleep patterns, and there's major studies on that. So there was a lot of BS going on during that interview. I'll say that. But, hey, you got the interview. Who else gets you the director of HARP? We'll be right back. Stay with us.